We are going to be, well, here's what we're going to do. When I teach, I try not to jump around too much. That's mostly for me because I can get distracted so easily. Now, we are going to spend the majority of our time in Psalm 136. That's our assignment for this morning. However, what I want you to do is open up to 2 Timothy chapter 3 first, and we'll read a few verses there, and then we will go over to Psalm 136. And we will be blessed there. But 2 Timothy chapter 3, and I'll give you a moment to turn there. And we'll read just the first five verses. I want to point something out to you there that will set the stage for Psalm 136. 2 Timothy chapter 3, Paul's writing to Timothy, his protege, his disciple. And in the first five verses of chapter 3, he says this to them, "But know this," so pay attention to this, Timothy, "that in the last days," which we believe we are living in, "that in the last days, perilous times will come." Dangerous times. Why? Verse 2, "For men," and that's mankind, it's not just the guys, but we seem to do these things really well. "For men will be lovers of themselves," selfishness, "lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power." And Paul says to Timothy, the teacher, the pastor, "and from such people turn away." This is a gnarly list. We can all agree on that. And it certainly does describe the days that we are living in. But I want to point something out. In fact, just one word to you. Who would have ever thought that in this list of lovers of themselves and lovers of money and boasters and other things like brutal and unforgiving and slanderers, that Paul would include the characteristic of being unthankful in that? Who would have ever thought that? Who would have ever put unthankfulness on the same level as all the rest of these characteristics? Few of us would, and yet Paul does, because it is an indicator of the wickedness of the heart of mankind. And you and I, as we are moving full steam ahead toward Thanksgiving, isn't that incredible that we're already looking at another Thanksgiving? Time is moving faster, isn't it? And it may be, no doubt, that many of you have already begun to make plans with your family and where we're going to eat and where we're going to gather and what we're going to do and what we're going to have and what time. And no doubt those of you that have done that, not all of you, but many of you have already been dealing with the family drama because of that. What you and I want to do is to make sure that we are heading toward this holiday. It's a wonderful holiday. I'm a Christmas guy. That's my favorite holiday, but Thanksgiving is a very, very close second. I love it. But you and I, as we head toward Thanksgiving, we want to make sure that we are not characterized by those things that those in the last days and the perilous times are characterized by. If anyone should be thankful, it ought to be the people of God. Amen? And so you and I will be looking at Psalm 136 this morning to remember why we should be thankful and to give us some reasons to be thankful. So you can turn to Psalm 136 there as we consider these verses. Now, if you want to take notes, and even if you do not want to take notes, this may help you to keep the study organized a little bit better in your mind and help it to flow a little bit better. I've got two main divisions in Psalm 136, and we will cover all of the verses. But the first three verses I titled, "Give Thanks." Very simply, give thanks. Secondly, in verses 4 to 26, that's 4 through the end of the chapter, I titled, "Great Wonders." So give thanks and then great wonders. We will open it up in our first main division, which is give thanks. And we'll read all three verses to start our study. "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his mercy endures forever. Now, you will notice right away what becomes most obvious is that line that is repeated in every single verse. And I've got great news for you, and it's great news. That line is repeated in all 26 verses of this psalm. Keep in mind that this was not just a psalm to be read in a church setting, but it was a song that someone had written for group worship. We'll get into that some more later. But let's look at some things very quickly here before we leave these first three verses. He actually uses three different titles to point to God. He says, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord." And then he says in verse 2, "Oh, give thanks to the God of gods." And then in verse 3, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord of lords." And we may look at that and say, well, what's the big deal? You know, not really a big deal. But he uses three different important titles, names, that tell us or reveal something to us about God. In the first verse, you will notice that it is the word Lord or the name Lord or the title Lord, and it's all in caps. For you and I, this indicates for us that this is the name Jehovah. Some people pronounce it Yahweh or Yahweh. We'll leave that to all of the Bible scholars on Instagram to argue over. We just want to say this, that what that title is indicating for us, Jehovah, is that he is the self-existing one or the eternal one. The self-existing one or the eternal one. Now, this is a hard concept for us because everything that we know has had a beginning. Everything and everyone has had a beginning. And to consider that God has always been, has always existed, is a difficult thing for us to wrap our puny brains around. And in fact, we can't fully wrap our brains around that. We do not fully understand that. And perhaps when we go to be with the Lord and we're with him face to face, perhaps we'll understand that. But he's the self-existing one. The one that from creation everything came. He was the one that created all things. And in fact, we'll talk about that some more in just a few moments. But notice verse 2, the second title, "Oh, give thanks to the God of gods." Now, you'll notice there he starts with a capital G-O-D and then moves to a lowercase g. The word God there is the word Elohim, E-L-O-H-I-M, one word, Elohim, and it means that he is the strong one and can even indicate that he's got the strength of an oak. And by saying that he is the God of gods, it's saying that he is the strongest. Now, you and I understand that he's the only God. But as perhaps idols are concerned, or even earthly titles that may be ascribed to some earthly ruler who would consider themselves a god, here we're being told that we are to give thanks to the Elohim, or the strong one that is above all the strong ones. In other words, the strongest. He then moves into verse 3, and he tells us once again, for the third time, give thanks to the Lord of lords. And you will notice that the word lords there, the first one, has changed. It's an uppercase L. The rest of the letters are lowercase. And then he says the Lord of lords. This is the name or the word or the title Adonai, E-D-O-N-A-I. So we have Jehovah and Elohim and Adonai. And Adonai there in verse 3 means sovereign, that he's sovereign, he's all-powerful over all things. And you will note that he says in verse 3, give thanks to the Lord of lords. So give thanks to the sovereign over all sovereigns. Those, again, that are on earth that may consider themselves to be sovereign or that other people may consider to be sovereign. You know, like a Caesar who was considered to be a god or God. The psalmist here is telling us, is pointing out to us that the God that we worship and belong to is over everything. Jehovah, Elohim, Adonai, the self-existing one, the strong one, the sovereign one. Now, the other interesting thing here is that he says in verse 1, he gives us a reason why right away why we are to give thanks to God. And he says, for he is good. We all understand that. He's good. He's good. But then he goes on to say this, for his mercy endures forever. And in my Bible, my translation, the word endures is in italics. Yours may be that way, I'm not sure. Or it may not be there at all. And you may think, you know, what is this guy, you know, what heresy is this guy teaching? The fact that it's in italics tells us that those who were translating the Bible or giving us what we have here sitting on our laps, they're telling us that the word endures was not the original word that was in the original language there when it was written. Now, that may scare us and we go, well, there it is. People are changing it. But the reason that, or the fact that the writer puts it in italics, or the transcriber, I'm sorry, puts it in italics, is to indicate that for us, that, hey, this was not originally there, but for our English language, we've inserted it there to help us understand the flow of that verse. And so you could read it, for his mercy forever, and that's okay. You can read it that way, but it certainly helps, for his mercy endures forever. Now, what is mercy? Mercy is me not getting what I do deserve. I deserve judgment, the judgment of God. I deserve judgment. And yet I haven't received that. At the ripe old age of 20 years old, God had mercy on my poor soul. He had mercy on me. I was living in disobedience to him, and instead of judging me, because he's righteous and he had the right to do so, instead, he had mercy on me and saved me. So that's what it's indicating there, that we are to give thanks to the Lord, first of all, for he is good. He's good to us, but also his mercy endures forever. I love mercy. And this is a verse that I have quoted often, even from this very pulpit, and oftentimes when I'm with your high school students in the high school room. I love how Psalm 51 opens up when David is penning that psalm, a psalm of repentance. And he mentions there, have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies, plural. Because God doesn't have just one mercy, does he? It's not just, well, you know, I'll give you mercy one time, but after that, forget it, you're on your own. You and I understand, as the imperfect people of God, we struggle with sin. God has mercy on us on a daily basis. He's got a multitude of tender mercies. And here we're told that that mercy, that it endures forever. He's always merciful. We love that about him. And so it may be. I mean, we haven't even left the first three verses yet. But it may be that as we head toward Thanksgiving, that you are facing the holidays for the first time in your life without a spouse or a loved one, somebody that's gone on to be with the Lord. And you may hear a preacher get up here and say, listen, we need to be thankful. And your heart may say, you may have a smile on your face, but your heart may say, for what? What reason do I have to be thankful? God took the people that I loved. He took that person. Why would I be thankful? The psalmist says, not because of something that you possess, not something tangible, but because of who God is. Do we ever think about that? You see, we are most often thankful for the things that we possess, the things that I can hold in my hand, whether that be a spouse or a child or a car or a house or a dog or a job or money or food or wherever it might be. But have you ever considered stopping and just being thankful for who God is? The fact that he's the self-existing one, that he's the strong one, that he's the sovereign one. And that's what the psalmist is telling us here, that we have lots to be thankful for. We belong to this God. The things that you may be experiencing, the hardships and the difficulties and the dark times, listen, they're temporary. And the tent is wearing out, isn't it? And we're going home soon. And you're going to be with God for eternity. And the temporary things that you could grasp and hold on to, those things will be long gone, a distant memory. You won't care. And so the psalmist, right out of the gate, is telling us, listen, you need to be thankful to the Lord, and gives us some reasons why. But perhaps you're wondering here, well, still, you know, what's the big deal or why? Let's move into our second main division, which is going to take us from 4 all the way down to verse 26, which is what I titled Great Wonders. And what the psalmist is going to do is he's going to tell us, here are some reasons to be thankful. We'll have some subpoints in here also as we head through it. But beginning at verse 4, look at what he says. To him who alone does great wonders. You may have a favorite athlete that is playing today in some football game or some other sport, and you may think he or she, boy, they're just the greatest ever, and you may consider them to be such a wonderful person, but it's to God alone. He's the one that does great wonders. If there are wonders that are to be considered great, they are to be measured against the wonders that God does. He says, to him who alone does great wonders. And then there's that verse repeated again, that phrase, for his mercy endures forever. Now, here's the first of the great wonders, and this will take us from verse 5 down to verse 9. The first of the great wonders is that he spoke the world into existence. Now, note what the writer does. The very first thing that he told us was, give thanks to the self-existing one. He could not have spoken the world into existence if he did not exist himself. And again, that's a hard concept for us to wrap our minds around. And I'm sure some of you, many of you have done this before, like I have in my puny little brain. You sit and you try to think, well, where did God come from? And as you consider what the Bible teaches, that he's eternal, he didn't have a beginning, he doesn't have an end, that doesn't make sense to us. And in our finite, puny little brains, we may look at that and go, well, no, that's not possible, but it is possible. Because that's exactly what God did. That's who he is. And what he did here, the first of his great wonders, is that he spoke the world into existence. Let's look at this beginning in verse 5. To him who by wisdom made the heavens. Verse 6, and by the way, I'm not going to read for his mercy endures forever at every verse because we all know what it says there and what it means. So I'll skip and I'll go verse 5 here. To him who by wisdom made the heavens. And then verse 6. To him who laid out the earth above the waters. Now, it's interesting that the psalmist writing this thousands of years ago used the phrase laid out. In our English, it's laid out. What the word means is that he stretched out the earth above the waters. Some of you may follow science, or some of you may love science or be scientists. And you will know it's been some time now. But scientists have figured out, they found out what God already knew. They found out as they have studied the universe and the planets that the universe is expanding. And it is expanding from one point. Now, they do not know where that point is. They can't find it. They cannot travel that far. But they know, they can tell as they've studied, that it is expanding from one point. And yet the psalmist here in Psalm 136, again, thousands of years ago in verse 6, says, God stretched out the earth above the waters. He's stretching it out, stretched out the universe, put everything where it belongs. Interesting. In verse 6, I'm sorry, let me read a few things about that I just recently learned about the universe and our earth where we live and even us. The earth travels around the sun about 8 times the speed of a bullet fired from a gun. Incredible. And that's why scientists have told us that if the world were ever to stop spinning immediately, we'd all just be flung out into outer space. It's moving so fast. Especially with these fall sunsets. There have been some beautiful ones already. And you're trying to get pictures and, you know, and then all of a sudden, oh man, you know, where'd the sunset go? It's gone and the moon's coming up and now the moon's moving and it moves so fast. Here's another one. This will bless your hearts, ladies. There are more insects in the food you get at Costco. No, I'm just kidding. There are more insects in 1 square mile of rural land than there are human beings on the entire earth. And they're all trying to get into your food pantry. Isn't that incredible? And we're in the fee. There's a lot of rural land out here. Just to bless your morning. Here's one more. A single human chromosome, just one, contains 20 billion bits of information. If written in ordinary books, in an ordinary language, it would take about 4,000 volumes. One chromosome. Just one. The earth is incredible. Creation is incredible. And he spoke the world into existence. We're not done yet. Verses 7, 8, and 9 deal with the planets, the sun, the moon. Look what he says in verse 7. To him who made great lights, for his mercy endures forever. Verse 8, the sun, here's the great lights, the sun to rule by day. And in verse 9, the moon and stars to rule by night. God created those, and he put them where they are, and he put them in the universe. Incredible. What an incredible thought. The self-existing one. What else did we learn about God? We learned that he was the self-existing one, but we also learned that he was the strong one, didn't he? Didn't we? And look what verses 10 through 14, or rather 15, tell us. Here's the second subpoint, and that is that what are the great wonder did he do? He saved his people from slavery. Saved his people from slavery. Verse 10, to him who struck Egypt in their firstborn. Now, in the event that you do not understand what he's talking about, and maybe you're not familiar with your Bible to that extent yet, what you'll want to do is, I would recommend, you can find out about the Exodus in the book of Exodus, the second book in the Bible, but I would recommend going back to Genesis, reading through Genesis, and then making your way into the book of Exodus. Those first five books of the Bible are incredible. But the story of the Exodus and what he's referring to here is the story when God used Moses to go back to Egypt and to lead his people out of slavery. Look what God did. Verse 10, to him who struck Egypt in their firstborn. Now you go, in their firstborn. Their firstborn sons died because of Pharaoh's disobedience to the Lord, because of his refusal to let God's people go. Now, in the event that you go, well, you know what? That's not fair, and God shouldn't have done that, and why would he do that? Why would he strike the firstborn? Well, here's why. That was the last of several plagues. And each time the plague intensified and God warned through Moses, Moses would go back and say, if you don't let God's people go, he's going to send this plague. And there was locusts and water that turned to blood, and there were so many things. And each step of the way, Pharaoh hardened his heart. And so the plagues intensified until finally God said, if you don't let my people go, I'm going to take the firstborn of every Egyptian. And Pharaoh would not relent, and that's exactly what God did. And that's what it took to rescue his people. Notice what he says in verse 11. And brought out Israel from among them. God saved his people from slavery. And notice how he did it in verse 12. With a strong hand. Wait a minute. I remember hearing something about, oh, that's right. Elohim. Strong one. He did it with a strong hand. And look at this in verse 12, with an outstretched arm. And in verse 13, to him who divided the Red Sea in two, because as they were leaving Egypt, God split a sea open in order to help his people escape from their captors, the Egyptians. Incredible. And the word, therefore, divided in verse 13 is the idea of slicing through something. It's like taking a knife or a sword and slicing through something. It's the same word that was used when Abraham cut the animal in two. And the psalmist, as he's writing, he pictures God taking out a sword and slicing the sea open perfectly and so that his people could walk through. Miraculous. Great wonders. But I love verse 12. I love verse 12, that he saved them with a strong hand and with an outstretched arm. And it is true that we are talking about the children of Israel here in these verses. But this is true of you and I also, is it not? Did you notice what it says in verse 12? That he did it with a strong hand and with an outstretched arm. And there are people in this room that were addicted, that were enslaved. And we thought that we were never going to be able to break free from those addictions and from that slavery. And yet God, in his multitude of tender mercies, came with a strong hand and with an outstretched arm, and he reached down into the gutter and he saved your sorry self. He had mercy on you. It's the same thing. It's the same God. He goes on in verse 14, still talking about saving his people from slavery, verse 14, and made Israel pass through the midst of it, through that Red Sea. And in verse 15, but he overthrew Pharaoh and his army in the Red Sea. And he used that same sea that he had saved, used to save his people. He used that to destroy the captors who were coming after Israel. They hadn't had enough, and so they were coming after them for more. And God dealt with the enemy. And didn't God do that for so many of us? People that we thought we would never be able to break free from. People that had us trapped or enslaved. Things that were consuming us. And God had mercy on us. How wonderful to remember. Here's another great wonder. Beginning at verse 16 and taking us down to verse 22. He safely led his people. Look at verse 16. To him who led his people through the wilderness, to him who struck down great kings and slew famous kings, Sihon, king of the Amorites, and Og, king of Bashan. But he led his people safely through the wilderness. Verses 16 through 20 are telling us that he provided protection for his people. Protection for his people, if you're taking notes. Protection. He protected his people. And all of us, even as Christians, as believers, we've had times of wilderness, haven't we? And if you haven't, they're coming. We cannot fully understand or benefit from God if we have not been through the wilderness. If he has not been tested, we cannot fully understand who he is. And so all of us experience wilderness times, times of wondering and wandering. When we're looking around and saying, you know what, is God really there? Because I don't see him, because all the only thing that I see around me is jungle or forest, or I see enemies. And where is God at? You keep telling me he's here, but where is he at? And it's not until after, and we know that a vision is 20/20, hindsight is 20/20, and we look back and we go, oh, there he was. He was leading me. You know, several years ago when I was at another church there in San Bernardino, I was tasked with leading a small group of the Christians from there to join U-Turn and Revival on a mission trip to the Philippines. I went to the Philippines. And you know, on that trip is when I first met Pastor Cisco. How many of you know Pastor Cisco? Pastor Cisco, yeah, he's a sweet guy, isn't he? Yeah, he tried to kill me. It's the first time that I had met him. I didn't know him. I met him there. And he was this mysterious guy, kind of off, you know, in the background. That's how he operates. I love that guy. But we were there, and we jumped in a riverboat with the whole team, and we're going up this river, and we're going to a little village called Canupe. It was called Canupe. I said, no, I can't. I've already paid to be on this trip. I can't. No. But we pulled up to these stairs, and there were these stairs that were almost vertical, almost completely vertical. And we go up these stairs, and we start to hike back through the jungle to this village. And it wasn't very long before some of the team became exhausted and had to stop. And I had one of my team members that had to stop. And so Pastor Cisco, being a medical guy, he stops and he says, okay, you know, if you're not feeling well, sit down. Let's make sure that you're hydrated. And he's checking everybody. And I'm waiting around because one of my team members is there, a young lady. And I'm waiting to see how she's going to do. And then Pastor Cisco, and the rest of the group took off. They went to the village. And the rest of the and he decides, hey, he tells me, I'm actually going to take all these people back down to the boat. I don't want to push them further on into the jungle. And I said, that's fine, Pastor Cisco. I said, but I'd still like to go to the village. How do I get there? You know what he told me? He told me there's stones on the ground. Just follow those. I didn't know. And so I saw the stones. I go, okay. So I started to walk. And he takes off with the group. The rest of our group is already in the village in Canupe. And I thought it was right around the corner. I'm looking, there's nothing but jungle. And it wasn't until I found myself in the middle of the wilderness, in the middle of the jungle, I'm looking around and I'm realizing that Pastor Cisco's gone with his group. The rest of the group is gone up ahead. Nobody knows I'm out here in the Philippine jungle. And I hadn't bothered to check before I left for the Philippines to find out, do they have predators there? Do they have tigers? Do they have snakes? What do they have there? I don't know. And now I'm in the jungle. And all I can think is, man, I hate Cisco. But I found the stones. I mean, I had never looked so hard for stones. I was looking, and I found those stones, and I made my way to the village. I thought he loved me. I thought we were brown brothers, and he just left me. He sent me out into the jungle, but God was good. But we have those times in our lives, don't we, spiritually sometimes? We're looking around, and all I can see is doubt, and there's just jungle, and there's forest, and there's just wild, and I'm not sure where God's at. And the psalmist proclaims, he led his people through the wilderness. He'll do it again. Gave them protection. Look at verses 21 through 22, which are still part of the safely leading his people. But not only did he give them protection, but also provision. Verse 21, this is an interesting couple of verses here concerning what's going on in our world today. Verse 21, and gave their land as a heritage. I didn't make this up. Verse 22, a heritage to Israel, his servant. Everybody's arguing right now about whether Israel should be in the land and whether they have the right to exist. And even Christians have gotten mixed up in it because that's what we do. We love to follow the world and say what they say and parrot those things. And even the Christians are trying to figure out, you know, is Israel right? Should we support Israel? Should we not? Are they really God's people? Have we, as the church, replaced them? The psalmist says that God gave them the land as a heritage. He gave it to Israel. It's theirs. I didn't make it up. It's right there. The psalmist wrote it thousands of years ago. I didn't say that. And as you continue on through the scripture, nothing has changed. Nothing's changed. He safely led his people, gave them protection and provision. But he does the same thing for us. He's done the same thing for us, hasn't he? We have reasons to thank him. What he does lastly in verses 23 through 25 is he gives us a summary. He simply summarizes the entire psalm up. And he says in verse 23, who remembers, still speaking about God, who remembered us in our lowly state. You know, the holidays have a way of bringing out the very worst in families, don't they? The very worst. And it may be extended family, aunts, uncles, grandparents, or it may even be our own kids or our own parents. And maybe they've forgotten us. Maybe loved ones, people that we dearly love, maybe they've forgotten us. They've moved on. And as you and I head closer and closer to the holidays, some of us are absolutely dreading the holidays. I get it. Because that may mean that for the first time, again, maybe you're sitting at a table without your spouse or without a loved one, with a child, somebody that you lost. Maybe you're looking forward to an empty table with just a lonely dinner and it's just you because everybody else has forgotten you. I've got wonderful news for you this morning. The psalmist proclaims here, he remembered us in our lowly state. And I get it. You go, well, you know what? That's nice, but I can't wrap my arms around that. But if we have nothing else to be thankful for, we can be thankful for this, that he remembered us in our lowly state, our humble state. What else did he do? Verse 24, rescued us from our enemies. Isn't that incredible? Rescued us from our enemies. There were things in our lives that we thought we would never be able to escape. And yet God set us free. He rescued us from our enemies. And then finally, in verse 25, he gives food to all flesh. What does he do? He does three things. He remembered us in verse 23. He rescued us in 24. And in verse 25, replenishes us. It's true. Some of you may be looking forward to a holiday that's a lonely holiday. Nobody else at your table. But you've got the Lord. And I get it. You can't just wrap your arms around that or that thought or that idea, but it's great news. And the temporary things that you and I are dealing with, they will pass. The tent is wearing out, as I mentioned earlier. You and I are going home very soon. And we're going to be with the Lord and the holidays and the things that we own and the possessions and even the people. Listen, we're going to be with the Lord and those things are not things that we're going to be worried about. We're not going to be saying, oh, but I wish I could have just had one more holiday there. You know, no, we're going to be with the Lord. We'll be complete. Isn't that a wonderful thought? And the psalmist ends in verse 26 the same way that he started. Oh, give thanks to the God of heaven. Tells us again. He told us in verse 1, actually verses 1, 2, and 3, give thanks to God. Now he tells us that he says, give thanks to the God of heaven. Listen, if he's the God of heaven, he certainly can deal with our earthly issues. He's sovereign. He's strong. He can carry those burdens, that heavy heart that you have. He can do that. Cast your cares on him, for he cares for you. Oh, give thanks to the God of heaven, and then finally, for his mercy endures forever. Now, let me share something with you. This psalm was not just a psalm for personal reading or personal contemplation, although we can do that, and we certainly should, but it was meant for group worship. And what would have happened is there would have been either an individual or individuals, people, a group of worship leaders. And what they would have done is they would have, it would have been a call and response. The worship leader or leaders would have called out the first part, oh, give thanks to the Lord for he is good. And then the believers that were there to worship, the other worshipers, would respond with, for his mercy endures forever. And they would proclaim that together. So guess what you and I get to do this morning as we leave? What I'm going to have you do is, if you can, please stand with us. And we're going to read this together. I will call out the first part of each verse, and you will respond each time with, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods. Oh, give thanks to the Lord of lords. To him alone, to him who alone does great wonders. To him who by wisdom made the heavens. To him who laid out the earth above the waters. To him who made great lights. The sun to rule by day. The moon and stars to rule by night. To him who struck Egypt in their firstborn and brought out Israel from among them with a strong hand and with an outstretched arm. To him who divided the Red Sea in two and made Israel pass through the midst of it, but overthrew Pharaoh and his army in the Red Sea. To him who led his people through the wilderness. To him who struck down great kings. And slew famous kings. Sion, king of the Amorites. And Og, king of Bashan. And gave their land as a heritage. A heritage to Israel, his servant. Who remembered us in our lowly state and rescued us from our enemies, who gives food to all flesh. Oh, give thanks to the God of heaven.